Blog Talk Radio.
Well, I'm a long tall Texan. I wear a tin gallon hat. He rides from Texas where the tin gallon hat. Yes, I'm a long tall Texan. I wear a tin gallon hat.
Folks, we'll be taking next weekend off because it is Memorial Day weekend as well. I hate to do it. I feel guilty, but got to do what you got to do with family sometimes. And on Mother's Day, you got to take off because if Mama ain't happy, ain't nobody happy. And, of course, next weekend is Memorial Day weekend, and there'll be some stuff going on with the family that requires my attention elsewhere. I've been given everything I can along with my buddy Rick Burlow and Teresa Brusky and Becca Lower and, you know, all my great, wonderful friends, Billy Cotter and we've been given a lot now for about a year and it's just that time of the year. Sometimes you gotta take off. We got a great show lined up today. We really do. Teresa, my buddy Teresa, has lined up three wonderful guests. We're going to start the show off as soon as I get through with my editorial with a man I've come to know and I've corresponded with a little bit, Sergeant Quintana out of Florida with changeitback2012.com, and I'm going to play his promo here in just a minute. This man, I am just so impressed by this young man. To call him a brother of mine as a veteran is a it's an understatement to say that it's an honor. We also have Derek Donovan on, the Vice President of Fisher House, which is an organization dedicated to veterans coming back from the sandbox, as well as Rob Swartwood of Ranger Coffee, who is another outfit that is there to help my band of brothers and sisters. Folks, before we get into bringing Sergeant Quintana on, I do want to do, as I do every Sunday, give you my editorial, my thoughts. And I'm just going to speak about one little incident that happened over the last 2 weeks since we last spoke. My editorial is called, "Will America Slumber Forever in the Tomb of the Capulets?" Little Shakespearean twist there, but you'll understand in just a minute. This last week, we had the pleasure of listening to old Joe Biden speak to our fellow Americans up in Ohio with a fist-pounding rant reminiscent of Nikita Khrushchev on 12 October 1960, when at the podium of the United Nations General Assembly, he pounded his shoe on the podium and began a lengthy denunciation of Lorenzo Sumulong, head of the Filipino delegation, branding him, among other things, a jerk, a stooge, a lackey, and a toady of American imperialism, and demanded that Assembly President Frederick Bullen of Ireland called Sumulong to order after Sumulong claimed that Eastern Europe had been deprived of political and civil rights and had effectively been swallowed up by the Soviet Union. In Biden's Ohio speech, Biden effectively went nuts, claiming we didn't get it and that we're not out for the little guy. The fact is, America has been swallowed up by an out-of-control federal government that has taken us so far down the road of socialism and usurped our Constitution that we are now a scant memory of what we once were. Since taking office in January 2009, Obama enjoyed a full 2 years with supermajorities in both the upper and lower house. What has it gotten America? The Obama-Biden team has racked up more than $5 trillion in new debt, runaway spending. The record amounts of debt are a direct result of huge spending increases by the Democrats in Congress and the White House. In 1 year, controlling the White House and Congress, Democrats increased the annual deficit by 308%, from $458 billion to $1.4 trillion. 308%, patriots. Let me say that one more time. 308% in 1 year. A quick review of Democrat spending increases in 2009 shows why the deficit exploded. In 2009 alone, House Democrats passed $787 billion in stimulus spending, which will also add $347 billion in interest. Two omnibus spending bills totaling more than $855 billion, and an increased non-defense spending of 12%. Another result of the Obama-Biden team's runaway spending is record-breaking deficits for the next decade and beyond. Since Obama was inaugurated, the U.S. has had an average monthly deficit of $122.6 billion. By comparison, from the year 2000 until 2008, the average annual deficit was $196 billion. Unfortunately, the trend of increased federal deficits will not come to an end under the president's budget. According to the president's own estimates, his budget and spending plan will cause deficits to average $905 billion for each of the next 10 years. $905 billion. What an obscene and gross amount of money. Budget shortfalls incurred by the government fuel the rise of the nation's debt because the government is forced to borrow money to meet the shortfall. In 2009, the budget deficit was $1.4 trillion for the first time in history. The deficit exceeded $1 trillion, and for the first time, the deficit exceeded 10% of gross domestic product since World War II. Patriots, this is a pivotal election cycle. Perhaps the most important of our lifetime that we shall ever know. This ignis fatuus, this will-o-wisp conjured up by the distempered brain of the wild and reckless left, will plunge America into the bogs and marshes of confusion and chaos, leaving America abandoned by all her friends, and leave her in ruin. Conservatives must take responsibility for how we move this dialogue forward. We must convincingly but respectfully stand for what is inherently right about America and our free market system, and the importance of a limited government, so that we might once again be free, independent, prosperous, and happy. And socialism, as it should, will slumber forever in the tomb of the Capulets. Together we can concert some measure for the advantage of poor America, but alas, I fear our doom may be sealed. The friendship of the lion for the lamb, and our short-sighted, run-mad politicians are so bent on the ruinous policy of socialism that I much fear it will carry the sword of Democles, unless America is not blind to her own interest. If we, the conservative base, can pull in the moderate Democrats and independents, she may, within the next 4 years, once again become one of the most prosperous communities on the face of the earth. I pray heaven and our governors in their wisdom and our fellow Americans to avert the evil of socialism with all of its concomitant dire calamities, insignificance, degradation, oblivion, and annihilation, which must follow in its train. That's my editorial, and I'm sticking to it. I'm going to pull in here my buddy real quick, Rick, to say hi. Tell us what's going on next Saturday. Then we're going to pull in Sergeant Quintana. Oh, I'm going to tell you all a little bit about Sergeant Quintana. Then we're going to pull him in and see what my brother has to say. Rick, how you doing, my friend?
Doing all right, Michael. How about yourself?
Doing good. A little pissed off this morning with Joe Biden and Obama. But, you know, is there anything new about that?
In the motor words of Gorman Pyle, surprise, surprise, surprise.
All right, well.
Before you go on any further, I got to say that I love reading and listening to your editorials, because every week you continue to own the narrative.
Well, that's what we have to do, Rick. We have to own the narrative. And I think Sergeant Quintana is gonna tell us a little bit about owning that narrative today. If you don't mind, Rick, I mean, that's a good segue into Sergeant Quintana. I want to bring in Sergeant Quintana here, and before I ask him to speak, Sergeant Quintana started a movement. Well, Sergeant Quintana is a Purple Heart veteran of the Iraq War, and led by everyday citizens of the United States of America, who will no longer sit back and watch the power of the people continue to slip into the hands of reckless and irresponsible government. This is a man after my own heart, Rick. I mean, his mission statement is to the T. His goal is to unite and to defeat all elected officials who have made a mockery of our Constitution, including the worst offender of all, those are my words added to this, President Barack Obama. And in turn, we will elect men, women, and a president with the resolve to once again and without apology make the United States of America the greatest nation the world has ever conceived. Now, these are words that you and I have been speaking for a while, and Sergeant Quintana is another individual who has a movement that is worthy of being looked at and being promoted with every ounce of energy that we have. Sergeant Quintana, before I bring you on, I want to play one thing. Folks, listen up to this.
Hey, everybody. My name is Sergeant Quintana. I'm a former Marine veteran of the Iraq War. And I've embarked on a mission called Change It Back 2012.com. We're going to serve as the outward expression, the visible expression, of what will be the silent voting majority on Election Day that will rise up to vote in defense of our Constitution and Republic and defeat every politician who has made a mockery of our Constitution. And that includes this current president, Barack Obama. The left always says that we have no organization whatsoever. There is no unity. We're going to prove them wrong. So if you haven't done so, go to the website, get your shirt, and please pass it around.
And that website, folks, is changeitback2012.com. Without any further ado, Sergeant Quintana, my brother, I'm so thankful that that you're on here. I want to just say your mission is to unite 1 million Americans under the banner as a visible outward expression of the voting majority to take us in the direction that you believe and I believe that our country needs to be in. You and I are both veterans. We're cut from the same cloth. We have many folks listening today that are not veterans, but they serve their country. I tell folks, and I believe you'll agree with me, Sergeant Quintana, I tell folks all the time, you know, you and I, we served our country by wearing the uniform, but there's all kinds of service to one's country, and one's service is by getting involved. Tell us a little bit about Change It Back 2012 and how people can help serve their country, unlike the way you and I served our country, and it still be as honorable as people like to look at you and I and say thank you for your service. Does that make sense?
Yeah, Michael, hey, man, let me first just thank you, man. It's my pleasure, it's my honor to be speaking to your audience, so I really appreciate you giving me the time to share this with them.
You're quite welcome, my friend.
Listen, what you just said is a message that I've been trying to carry to everyone and anyone that I meet. And one of the things is that you do not necessarily need to have served in the military to serve this nation. So anyone who is out there doing everything that they can to protect the liberties that have been entrusted to us by our founding fathers, those people are just as any other person who sat in a foxhole or who just fought alongside any other military service member. You know, we've done it, like you said, in uniform. Other people, as long as they're involved, as long as they're guarding, they're standing up for the freedoms that we believe in, the freedoms that, again, some people have taken for granted for so many years, those people are serving just as much as, you know, many of us who have done it in uniform. So, and that's something that needs to continue to be told, that you don't necessarily need to have been in the Marines, in the Army, Navy, Air Force to serve this nation.
You know, Sergeant Quintana, wouldn't you agree with me that perhaps, you know, I know, you know, you and I, we exchanged the niceties of thank you for your service. And you know, you and I were brothers in that we both served.
Right.
And we individually get from people, you know, other than ourselves, we get from other people, thank you for our service. Sometimes it makes me feel a bit funny. I don't know why, it just does. But I appreciate it. But I think the biggest, for me, the biggest thank you I can get from anybody are the circle of friends I have who've not served, but who are serving with me now doing what we're doing to get rid of the socialist that we have sitting in our White House now. Do you kind of agree with that? You know, thank you for the thank you, but if you really want to thank me, get in here and fight with me. Let's change the mockery, as you say, of our Constitution that has occurred.
And that is absolutely right. Whenever I get a chance to talk to someone, and I feel the same exact thing. In fact, I try to turn it on them, you know, really thank you for supporting us. You know, we can't do it without you guys, without having people like you supporting us back home. But, yeah, the truth of the matter right now is that what we need to focus on, and if you really want to make that thank you be as from the heart, as effective as it could be, is, you know, our focus right now is to make sure that we protect this republic. And I need you just as much as you needed me to be out there in the front lines. Right now, it seems like our enemy, or our biggest enemy right now, it's from within. Those that are trying to undermine our great republic right now.
Absolutely. Well, you served in the 90s, am I correct?
No, I served in from 99 up to about 2006.
Okay, so you know, so the more recent wars you've been in.
Right.
I was in during the 80s. I was in when we had a Berlin Wall. I was in when we had a Soviet Union. Our training was not geared towards desert fighting. It was we spent a lot of time in South America. Daniel Ortega was in down there with, with the Sandinistas and the Nicaragua, when communism was trying to move west, and so all of our training was geared towards fighting a war against the Soviet Union, against socialism. Now, it doesn't matter whether it was fighting against that or fighting against the neo-fascists of the Islamic world now in the Middle East. It's all basically the same. It's wanting to take over and dominate what we hold dearest to us in our heart, which is freedom, and it's freedom for everybody. But what I see happening, Sergeant Quintana, is, and I look at it through the eyes of someone that's 50 years old that remembers well duck and cover, from the threat of mutual assured destruction, crawling underneath my desk when the alarm went off because, we were practicing like an atomic bomb was coming in over our heads. I look at it through those eyes, a much different generation than many of my friends, and you, of course. But I see a man sitting in our White House now that has embraced Leninism, Marxism, and wants to take us down that road of a failed policy of a utopian government that just can't exist. What are your thoughts about that?
Listen, I don't know if your audience knows this, but I originally came from Venezuela. Okay, that's the country that I was born in, the country that I grew up.
Then you know well about socialism. Please, the floor is yours.
Well, just a few months before I left with my whole family, the country had gone under a coup d'etat, a failed coup d'etat by Lieutenant Colonel Hugo Chavez. A lot of people know who he is right now. Now he presides over the country. He's the president of Venezuela. And you just named Ortega, who you said you were trained to deal with back then, and he's the president of Nicaragua right now. You have Evo Morales down in, I think it's in Bolivia. And you have the other gentleman, I forget his name, from Ecuador. There's a sweeping movement of socialism going on in the Western Hemisphere right now. We've always seen socialism as something so far away from us. To me, Michael, it's surreal that right now in the United States of America, not even 5 years ago, this was not a term that many of us were even thinking about. Marxism, socialism. Something that maybe we just looked in the books and thought about that all the nations went through. But we're seeing this in our own nation, creeping in. And when you have a man like this current president who takes every chance that he gets that to apologize to other nations, to reassure other nations and citizens of other nations that he's going to hold our people, like our soldiers who maybe accidentally burned the Quran in Afghanistan, or like the specialist who went on a killing rampage, which that's right now being looked at right now to exactly what happened. This president has gone out of his way to apologize to them and to reassure them that he's going to hold the people responsible accountable to the full extent of the law. And he never does the same when our troops are killed. When our officers are killed inside of a ministry compound belonging to the Afghan government and executed at point blank. When I see this president, who's supposed to be the commander-in-chief, go out of his way to reassure other people faster and in a more sure way than he does to the American people, it begs the question where his allegiance is at. And I just, right now, I really... It's very eerie, similar, the stuff that it's happening here in the United States as what happened in a country like Venezuela, where right now it's plagued with socialism, where the people that follow that president are willing to fight and die for that president. I mean, that's how sick and how deep that ideology goes into. So when go ahead.
I was going to say, and you better than anybody, Sergeant Quintana, can tell us about this coming from Venezuela. I see it as an illness that creeps in, that the left creeps into the mentality, and in the case of America, they've been breeding it into us since Franklin Delano Roosevelt for 60 years now. And they've gotten people so accustomed to the entitlement society that now the thought of austerity, of cutting off those programs, you know, when you've got roughly just slightly less than 50% of our country that doesn't pay taxes and, in fact, gets money back from those of us who do pay taxes that live on the support of the government and don't have to get up and go to work, it's hard to overcome that. Is that kind of what happened in Venezuela?
Yeah, well, as soon as Chavez went in, you know, you have a guy who was, you know, air quotes, democratically elected, who gets in and promises prosperity and unity for the whole country. But once he gets in, he knows that he needs to get to the poorest of the poor and just promise them every social program that he could come up with, give them as much money as he could, and unite that one group against the rest of the other Venezuelans who did not need or did not take advantage of any type of social programs in the nation. So he preached the same message that we started hearing from this president that now we call class warfare.
Folks, I want y'all to hear what Sergeant Quintana is saying. Does this not sound eerily reminiscent of the 99% versus 1%?
You know, it happened in Venezuela, and it's happened in any other place where one guy gets into power and believes that he has a mandate by the people to turn the country into what he wants the country to be. One of the things that Chavez did was, in order to make his plan work, was change the Constitution of Venezuela. The Constitution of Venezuela was changed to allow him to seek indefinite terms in the presidency. He has been in power right now for more than 10 years, and he's seeking re-election again. In Venezuela, presidents used to serve two terms, just like in the U.S. Well, in order for him to stop that and, you know, have indefinite terms, he changed the Constitution. And, you know, the only thing, Michael, that sets this nation apart from the rest of the world is the U.S. Constitution, our charters of freedom, the Bill of Rights, the Declaration of Independence. You do away with that, and America ceases to be America.
Well, you're
America
absolutely right.
America becomes like the rest of the nations in the world.
Indeed.
Well, you know, we can look back to history. I Sergeant Quintana, I'm a native Texan. In my family, I'm what we call a son of the Republic of Texas. My family has been here since prior to statehood. You know, my family moved here when, in fact, Texas was still a northern state of the United States of Mexico. They moved here, and they moved here under the Constitution of 1810, which was modeled after the United States Constitution. Now, and I'm telling you all this story because I don't know that we'll get to this point, but history repeats itself. Never underestimate history. The reason that Texas fought and gained their independence from Mexico, even though the Anglos had moved here under a constitution very similar to that of the American Constitution, was because Santa Anna, who had been a Federalist, became a Centralist and wanted to centralize power. Now, does that sound familiar? Wanted to centralize power in Mexico City, and the Anglo-Americans who had moved to Texas, as well as many of the Tejanos here in the northern states of the United States of Mexico, said that ain't happening. So they picked up arms against Santa Anna because he was usurping the Constitution, much as we see the same way Obama is usurping our Constitution now. This is how this happens. Is they come in, they usurp the Constitution, and unfortunately, in some instances, arms have to be picked up. Now, I pray heaven that that doesn't happen with us. I hope that we can find a resolve through our elections. But it seems to be getting worse and worse every 10 years. It seems like we keep giving up ground from the right and letting ourselves move to the left incrementally.
Well, and this is, Michael, why it is paramount that every American who's awake stand up and speaks the truth, dispels the lies. You know, what's happened is that for many years, many of us have remained silent. You know, I'm not including you in that group. You might have been, you know, the most outspoken person since ever. But there are many of us who went around, which is like nothing, with our personal lives, not taking into consideration that, just like Reagan say, freedom is just one generation away from expiring, from being lost.
You're absolutely right. And, you know, here's the shameful part about it, Sergeant Quintana, is I'm just like every other conservative. No, I've not been vocal. I've only been vocal this last year because for the same reasons I dare say that you are. We've finally taken enough. We've played ball. We've been courteous. You know, conservatives, we tend to be reserved. We tend to err on the side of believing in our country and going along to get along. But, I mean, that's why you have seen the birth of the Tea Party. We're done with that. That's why so many of us, although Mitt Romney is now our candidate and we will coalesce behind him, that's why you saw so many of us fight and struggle with the way that we did up until just recently, simply because we're tired of saying, okay, we're going to go along to get along. Now, it's been thrust upon us. And I don't want to get into, you know, you support who you support. I don't want to get into the presidential things necessarily. But what I'm saying is you're right. We all, as conservatives, have sat back and, to some degree, I have to say, unfortunately, we're to blame in some small measure for what has happened simply by being conservative. The very nature of being conservative is to kind of just sit back and be conservative and keep your mouth shut.
Well, you know, and if we do a self-examination just like you did right now, then we will come up with that conclusion. You know, we always blame the politicians for the state of affairs of our nation right now, and it's justifiably so that blame falls on their head. But we share part of that blame. We've made choices, the choice not to vote, the choice to vote for incompetent politicians, now the choice to vote based on party affiliation or on feelings. And this is what we need to start changing. You know, when I hear people saying that I am not going to vote because my vote doesn't count, and I constantly have this conversation with people every week, you know, I let them know this is why we are where we are. Because that freedom that we have been given, that right that we have been given, there's a responsibility that goes with that. And I'll speak right now, Michael, to the Christians. You know, I'm a Christian. I'll speak. Over 65 million Christians did not turn out to the 2008 election. Obama won by less than 10 million. If only 10 million professed Christians would have turned out to the elections, we would have had a different leader, you know, and it might not have been the candidate we wanted either. But I don't think a lot of us were really hot on McCain back then. But obviously, we wanted him instead of Obama.
Yeah.
But I guess we didn't want him bad enough because over 65 million professed Christians didn't turn out to vote. So my word right now, go ahead.
Go ahead, Sergeant Quintana.
My word right now to everyone that I meet, that I hear saying I'm not going to vote for one because my vote doesn't count or because my candidate didn't get the nomination, this is not the election to be withholding our votes. This is not the election to be making a statement or a point. This is the most crucial election that we have. You know, I got corrected the other day. I say it's the most crucial election of our lifetime. I think it's the most crucial election in our history of our nation because this is going to decide the future that we leave our following generations. I have a 7-year-old daughter. The last thing that I want to leave for her is a country that looks like the one that I left over 20 years ago.
Oh,
that
man.
That doesn't work. Where power is centralized in one city to decide what the rest of the country does and how the rest of the country runs. And this is not the way that this nation was founded by our founding fathers. A nation that was founded to have a small government that worked to what? To protect us from foreign invasions and to help in any disputes that the states had. but not to be as big as it is right now. One thing that you were talking about, that this has been happening since the 30s, and the progressive movement has continued. And they've had an agenda, as many of us have said, quiet. Like you said, we reserve on the right. A lot of us just want to go about our business and just believe that those in power are going to follow that document that our founding fathers left. But we've seen that that has not been the truth, and that it continues to be attacked and for a reason. Because if they can change that, if they can destroy that, then that's it. This country will never be the same. So we are the vanguard of our freedoms. We are those watchmen on the wall for our liberties. So if you hear people saying that they're not going to turn out to vote, persuade them not to do that. They got to get out of there and vote. And persuade as many people as you can to make sure that they vote, and vote responsibly by being informed. Information is at our fingertips like never before. There's no excuse for us to say we don't know what this candidate stands for. We can find out their voting record just by getting online. It's pretty easy to do.
Yeah, absolutely.
That's one of the things, Michael, that I've done with Change It Back 2012. There's plenty of resources there for people, you know, to make sure that this election they vote boldly and responsibly.
Folks, I just want to reiterate, we've got Sergeant Quintana on from changeitback2012.com. I want to urge you to go to his website. He's got some, look, if nothing else, $19 will get you a really cool T-shirt. Sergeant Quintana, tell us a little bit about what the goal is of Change It Back 2012. Rick and I are going to go in and buy a T-shirt. The $20 I know is going to recoup whatever cost you've got to put into it. But how does the extra money, how are you taking that money and putting it towards helping to defeat? Tell us some of the projects that you're doing.
Well, with Change It Back, you know, one of the things that I wanted to do with this shirt, this is not about a shirt only.
No.
The shirt has, there's a call that goes with this. When people are wearing the shirts, and I've had people who have personally come and told me this. In fact, I had a lady today at church tell me, hey, I'll wear the shirt. And this lady came up to me and asked me, do you know what that shirt says? And she says, yeah. And she was being asked this, Michael, because they thought, well, hold on. You're Hispanic. Aren't you voting for Obama? You know what shirt you have on? Because that's not a shirt for Obama. You know, the shirt just says Change It Back 2012. So there are people already reading into it. It's a conversation starter. You know, people are like, you want to change it back to the way it was when Bush was here? No. It's not what it is. We did take change, the platform that President Obama ran with on in 2008, and use it to say, we're going to change it back. But what is it we're changing it back to? It's about changing the country back to the original intent of our founding fathers, a constitutional republic with a government that has limited and enumerated powers given by the people. So one of the things with the shirt is to start a dialogue, and those people that are wearing it to be able to inform and educate others about our nation, about the principles that made this nation great, and about us returning to that. The other thing is about people declaring they're part of this movement, that they will, on election day, as a declaration to everyone who will see that day, they will be taking part in voting in defense of our Constitution and of our Republic. So these people will learn from here on, and especially on election day. Obviously, you got to check your electioneering laws to make sure that you're not violating any of them. If you have to cover while you go vote, at least wear it during the day. It's almost like that little I voted sticker, but on steroids.
Yeah, you know, I'll say.
Indeed, I like that.
Hey, Sergeant Quintana, I want to bring a friend of mine in that does a show called Red, White, and Blue on Conservative Nation Radio's. That's right there in Florida with you. This is a man that I want to bring in not only to ask you a question or two or whatever, but I want you to get to know because he's right there with you. And I want you to discuss a little bit how better people need to get on board to help you and how we can help you from either from Rick's standpoint or my standpoint. Rick, Sergeant Quintana, Rick Bulo, guys, I just want you to get to know one another. So, Rick, come on in. What do you have for Sergeant Quintana?
It's It's nice to meet you, Sergeant Quintana, and thank you for all that. And, I mean, I'm disabled, so I've not been able, so I've not fought in the military, but I do have a deeper appreciation for all that you had done in order to defend our country.
Oh, thanks, Rick. I appreciate it, man.
And also, what you had said earlier, I think you had said that you don't have to wear the uniform of the military in order to be on the front lines defending our republic. I mean, how can someone who is disabled, how can they get involved in being on the front lines?
Listen, one of the things, and I know this might sound tedious, but one of the things that people can do, you know, we have computers nowadays. One of the things that people can do is connect. Social media is a great tool. Connect with other people. If you have a Twitter account, use that Twitter account to let other people know about what's happening. There are things that organizations like, I think it's called Florida Family Council, they have a great tool where if you put your zip code, it will tell you people that are around you who have not registered to vote, who might lean conservative. And they have even a small little script and everything that you can personalize. A lot of us can do things like just calling them, calling those people, say, hey, listen, do you know what's happening? Do you know what we're facing right now?
Mm-hmm.
I'm going to vote this year. That's one thing that if you're housebound, you can do. And if you're not housebound, you can take that to the next step, which is get that list. It becomes a walk list.
Mm-hmm.
And go to door to door. You don't need to be with a particular organization. You don't have to do it with Change Your Back 2012.com. You don't have to do it with that Florida Family Council. You can just use the tools that are out there and just do your part. Get your own group. Get your own volunteers to go out there and make sure that we have a great turnout. It's the only thing, Rick, that it's really going to get it's going to cancel a lot of those fraudulent votes that will take place in this election.
Oh, yeah.
There will be fraud in this election, but if we have the numbers, that we can overcome that fraud.
You know, you are definitely right on there. You know, because I mean, like, I know that I have my own radio show every Saturday at 1:30 p.m. Eastern, and just like someone had said in the chat, that I am on the front line. I mean, I wasn't speaking to myself, but rather more or less to those out there, you know, because it's like everywhere I look, whether it's online or even offline, you know, talking to my neighbors, they're like, oh, I'm not interested in politics, no way, no how. But you see the thing is that I mean, how can we convince them that, hey, you know, be interested, you know, because if you don't, this country's going to go the way of Rome.
Well, one of the things that, because I have done it both ways, I've been passionate to the point of, you know what, I'm getting a little upset in this conversation that you're really not taking an interest in it. But I've also been passionate to the point of, you know, I'm going to be polite. I'm going to listen to what you have to say. I'm also going to tell you the truth, even if it offense, you know, and you're not going to convince everybody.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, I'll bring it back, Rick, to the Christian faith. Christians have been entrusted with preaching the gospel around the world. And if Christians were afraid of offending people because of the truth that is in the scriptures, there would not be Christians today. The Christian faith would not be today. Same thing goes with our values and the principles that we believe in.
Mm-hmm.
We should take every opportunity that we have to share those with people. And if we can persuade them, well, at least we told them. But we have to just take every opportunity that comes our way to make sure that people know the truth. Because there's plenty of lies and of propaganda out there. And if you don't have people countering that, then that's what's going to be truth for many.
Well, you know, and I'm just sitting here and I'm thinking, Sergeant Quintana, I'm thinking about the fact that you came from Venezuela. You live in Florida, which also has a large Cuban community who suffered under, you know, those that were born in Cuba that came here as refugees, not their children or their grandchildren, but those that actually lived through and know what, like you know what Chavez was about, or those from Cuba that know what Castro was about, or the Nicaraguans that know what Ortega is all about. What greater way to bring up the conversation about being involved to people who have come from countries? I mean, I have to say, I'm blown away because you, Sergeant Quintana, and Rick, I believe your wife is from Puerto Rico. Now, I know they've not had the problems in Puerto Rico that they've had, say, over in Cuba, but to have come from a country where you saw the infestation of socialism creep in and do what it did to your country is something that many of us here in America, it's like you said, you know, we talk about it, we give it lip service, but we don't really know about it because it happened in another country. Now, I understand it. I understand it because I'm a student of history. I read a lot. I understand what socialism does and how it creeps in. But many of our fellow Americans don't. And they don't, you know, when they, like Rick says, well, what do you need to give them a reason? What better reason can you give them than to say, look, you and I came from Venezuela or Nicaragua or from Cuba. We know. We're seeing this again for the second time in our lives. I mean, that has to be powerful. Or am I completely wrong?
No, it is. And in fact, it's a narrative, Michael, that I'm always using whenever I speak, especially to any immigrant. You know, I've spoken to immigrants not only from Hispanic countries, but immigrants from Eastern Europe, from the Ukraine. And one of the things that a lot of them think is, hold on, I don't like what I'm seeing. Now, with the Hispanic community, and I'll tell you this, and, if, you know, if Rick's wife is Puerto Rican, you know, that's...
My stepdad is, actually.
Oh, okay.
She's not?
My stepdad is.
It's his stepdad. Okay. I thought it was his wife. I apologize.
I'm not married at all.
Well, you know, one of the things that that I'm always telling anybody, especially on the right, you know, we hear this question being posed when in the presidential debate. Well, what do you have to say to the Hispanic community? First of all, the message should be the same for every group. Okay, if you're an American,
exactly.
You're American. Okay. You're an American, you're facing the same issues, just like any other American. It doesn't matter where you came from. But if you do want to say something to the Hispanic community, it's let them know you came here looking for a better opportunity for you and your family. You want your family to be successful. You want your kids to forge their own success stories. If you give this president and this ideology another 4 years, you will find yourself in a country like the one that you left. It's almost like
man.
You came here in vain. And, you know, and that's not far-fetched that this nation will begin to run like those nations where the only way that you got ahead was if you were connected to the political class, the ruling class, where the government, the central government, made the decisions for the whole nation. And it's beginning to look that way. You know, and people keep saying this, there's this whole class warfare message, you know, the rich and the poor and the middle class. And I got to tell you something, just like what happened in Venezuela, many people, the producers and job creators, left Venezuela. What happens to the rest of the people, the middle class, that depend on the government now? And if it's not by design what we're seeing here, you know what, it just begs the question that the attack being levied against those people who have amassed any type of wealth or success, it's almost like, well, if they leave, because they have the money to get out if they want to, those that are left here will depend on the government. And every time I look at how big the government gets and how many federal employees are compared to years ago, I keep thinking, why is that happening? Well, if you try to cut that right now, or if it keeps growing, you try to cut them later on, and you say you need to cut government, now you have a big portion of the population who is in the government dome. They're going to say, hold on, you're not going to cut government because you're going to cut my job.
You know what's frightening to me, Sergeant Quintana, and you're absolutely right. It's not, I mean, we're all Americans. I don't care if you immigrated here. You're an American now. It doesn't matter where you came from. But you can tell a story that those of us that were born on the soil, that doesn't make us any better or it doesn't make you any worse or nothing. It's not about that. But those of us that were born here, we take for granted something that you can teach us about. And that's what I'm talking about, the importance of the knowledge that you have, that you can teach those of us that have never known those circumstances, and then couple that with, take a look at Greece right now. We can look at our future by looking at Greece. We can see what's going to happen to our country by the overspending. And it boggles my mind that people don't get this and don't heed the message that you can give us, that you can educate us about.
And let me tell you something. And what happens with that, Michael, is that we need the people who are in prominence right now, our leaders. We have leaders in the conservative camp. They need to speak overtly. They need to put any type of hairs that they have in their tongue, put that stuff aside and speak the truth. Tell us how it is. And that's one thing that's frustrating me when I see sometimes a lot of Republicans get up there and talk in the cameras. I'm like, not too many people just understood what you just said. Talk to the people exactly how it is. Talk to them as you were talking to your body and let them know, listen, this whole thing right now is pretty screwed up. Let me tell you what it's going to be like if we don't do something right now. So this is why I said stand up every opportunity you have. Speak the truth no matter what scorn or ridicule it invites.
Speak and stand your ground.
And stand your ground. Polite but without any apology and without shame.
Well, I know for you and I, it's easy for – I mean, I know you – you know, that's just the upbringing we got in the military. We're going to stand our ground. And I know that many of our conservative friends, who like Rick, who do what they do, will stand their ground as well. It's a matter of bringing in those, like you say, Sergeant Quintana, that are, I'm not into politics or I don't care, or that just kind of want to bury their head in the sand. And they don't, you know, it's what do we do to shake them, to get them to understand, wait a minute, you don't understand, you can't be silent, you can't ignore this. You know, you have to, unfortunately, sometimes with some people, you have to use measures of shock to snap them out of it and make them understand the importance of where we, because Sergeant Quintana, you're absolutely right. This, you know, unlike going from Jimmy Carter to Ronald Reagan, I was in high school then. All right, Ronald Reagan was the first man I voted for. And, you know, yeah, that was desperate. Times were bad then. Inflation was horrible. We had to wait in line for gas. You got to get gas every other day. Yes, it was bad. But let me tell you, I mean, now obviously Jimmy Carter is as left as Barack Obama is now. But back in 1979, he was not as left as he is now. I mean, that's all relative. It's gotten more progressively to the left with all of everybody in the Democrat Party as the years have went by. But relatively speaking, if this were 1979, Jimmy Carter was not the equivalent of Obama as far as being left right now. We've went that much further since then, and it's become that much more acceptable to the point where we can have a president that talks, that openly says, I believe in redistributing wealth. Jimmy Carter couldn't have said that in 1979.
Right.
You couldn't have said that then. We did get rid of him, and that was a dire election. But you're right in that this is a dire election, because I honestly do not believe that our country can withstand another 4 years of a man who, if he gets reelected, will not have a reelection to contend with. He can do whatever he wants. Now, if that doesn't scare the bejesus out of you, I don't know what will. Not you, Sergeant Quintana or Rick, but the average person. If what you think has happened is bad now, imagine Obama with 4 more years and no worry of being elected, reelected.
You're right, Michael. A couple of months ago, last month when I had done my own editorials, I had actually played a clip from Star Wars Episode 3. As a matter of fact, it's right there in the audio archives right there. And I titled it Possible Second Term for Obama.
Mm-hmm.
I'm afraid that just like Palpatine had turned the old Republic in Star Wars Episode 3 into the Empire, that's what Obama's going to be doing if we give him 4 more years.
Well, yeah. I mean, we're not going to recognize America. Wouldn't you agree, Sergeant Quintana, that if this man gets reelected, we will not recognize America in 4 years?
And that's why we need to, no matter how we get labeled, even if we sound like the sky, even if our message sounds like the sky is falling, if we need to shock people by telling them the truth, wow, I mean, really, if truth is going to shock people, do it, because that's the truth. America will not look. America doesn't even look right now like what America did 5 or 6 years ago. So if he has 4 more years of free range where he knows he has nothing to worry about, no re-election to come up, no, I don't think America will be like America anymore. And people think that that's so far-fetched, but it's not.
No, it's not. Well, I don't even recognize America now, to be quite honest with you. I really don't. This is not the America I grew up in. And I don't know how I can quantify that, except to say that, you know, we've become a country now that used to believe in getting up and going to work and pulling yourself up by your bootstraps. That was the foundation upon which my parents, my grandparents raised me on, and my generation. You know, I grew up, my high school years were the 70s. And I know that there's been people that have been raised that way since then, but by and large, every generation that has come after me has become more and more about what's for me without having to work for it, as opposed to what do I have to do to get up and earn a dollar.
Yeah. Yeah, but listen, that's a message that keeps being propagated from the left in any way and everywhere that they can do it. And I'll give you two little things here, and you cut me off whenever you need to, but sitting down with my daughter watching some TV, and we're watching a small, she's 7 years old, she likes Marvel Comics and all of the little superheroes, and we're watching Batman Beyond cartoon. The evil guy, bad guy that Batman was fighting with, and I recorded it on my DVR, was a guy that said, I don't like government. Government is too big. Power to the people. He was the evil guy, because he was saying the government is too big and power should be of the people. If that doesn't tell you something about the indoctrination that is taking place for kids, this is what's happening in other countries. If you go to Venezuela, there's plenty of indoctrination for the kids. There is an anti-American feeling in any of the schools, public schools, run by the government. This is called the empire. Kids are growing up calling Americans petty Yankees. This is not, when I was there, there was nothing but admiration for the United States in Venezuela. people wanted to succeed just like what they used to see in the movies. People want to, we want to be like the U.S. We want to have our markets run like the U.S. We want to have our public services be like the U.S. I mean, well, I always hear people talking about the bad things that we've had here, the judicial system, all that. Go to Venezuela. Go to another country and see how those countries run. And you'll see that we've taken for granted a lot of what we had here. And the last thing we need to take for granted right now, it's our right to vote. So again, my message, if you come out with anything, what I said today is make sure that you turn out to vote. Even if you didn't get the candidate that you wanted as your nominee, you need to get out there and make sure that Obama does not get another 4 years. And not just Obama. You know, take your time to research your candidates at the local level, your congressmen and congresswomen, and make sure that they align with the Constitution. Their voting record is one that will reflect one of upholding and being guided by the Constitution. And if it's not, don't vote them.
Absolutely. Well, and, you know, you're absolutely right there. It, you know, we don't know what's going to happen in the general election. I fear that the worst may happen, and we may end up with another 4 years of Obama. In the face of that, what do we do, Sergeant Quintana? Well, what we do is we make sure that we get people in at our state, local, and in our, the lower house and the upper house, because it's going to take every bit of our fighting for the next 4 years if we end up with another 4 years of Obama to keep this country, to leave us something to salvage in four more years. We're going to have people in the Senate, in the House of Representatives, in our state houses, our county commissioners, our mayors, our, you know, just from top to bottom, bottom to top, however you want to look at it, we've got to get conservatives in place wherever we can, and we have got to be prepared for. I think you and I, you know, you and I as veterans or, you know, ex-military understand you plan for the worst possible contingency. And we've got to plan for the worst possible contingency, folks. We have to assume that to the that the winner of this next election is going to be Obama. We've got to work our butts off to make sure it's not, but we have to plan on the fact that it might be. What is our contingency if it is? Sergeant Quintana, I'm going to give you a couple of minutes here to finish up. I know you've probably got a very busy schedule. I think my next guest is on hold. But if you can stick around, would love to have you stick around. I've got Derek Donovan coming on from Fisher House. And then I have Rob Stallwood coming on from Ranger Coffee, two organizations that kind of that go hand-in-hand with yours as far as veterans go. Or just changing the course that we're going in. But I want to just give you a few minutes to wrap up. Tell us a little bit about how people can help you. Of course, Rick, I've already asked Rick to Rick is really big into an organization called Own the Narrative. I'd like to see you somehow or another, see how we can fit you into Own the Narrative and become more involved with that group, which is about, as the title implies, owning the narrative. Because really that's what you're talking about, Sergeant Quintana, is owning the narrative.
That's exactly right. Our message needs to be out there, needs to be overt, and needs to be clear. And that everybody that is out there can see a distinction of the messages that are being pushed out there. I would change it back if you want to help with this. Again, the shirt is something that will help an initiative that you'll be able to read in the website called Vets or Votes, where I seek to organize other veterans, family veterans, and even people who just support veterans to get out the vote within their communities, to organize their own get out the vote kind of little, you know, tours in their communities to make sure that we have a great turnout in this election. So proceeds of the shirts will also help for the collateral material or any other type of logistics that we need to make that happen. Again, the shirts have a voter number in the back. That is a sequential number going from 1 to 1 million. I would love for it to be more people than 1 million. But what we want to see is a visible number of people on election day across all 50 states as a declaration that the will and power of the people, of the American people, are still very much alive. So if you can't, just pass the word around, get them to site. One of the things that people have been doing on their own, it's optional, is registering their shirt number to represent the state that they will be casting their vote in this coming election. Plenty of resources there. You can take people to the website. There's things that you can do to find out somebody's registration status if you want to help them get registered to vote. You can check voting records for candidates. So there's plenty of resources there. So if you don't do anything, if you don't get the shirt, that's fine. At least get people involved and get informed. Because that's what we're going to need this coming election. People that are informed and that are going to vote responsibly.
Sergeant Quintana, I want to thank you so much for joining us this afternoon. First, let me thank you from me to you, brother to brother. Thank you for your service. Thank you on behalf of our audience today. I'm honored that you would join us today, and I'm honored that you would take an active role in what you're doing and the way that you're going about it. I truly admire what you're doing. You're a testament to the Marine Corps. Semper Fi, my brother.
And Semper Fi, and really thank you for the forum you gave me, for, you know, just allowing me to share this with your audience. And keep up the good work, man. And same to you, Rick.
Thank you, and I do hope to get you on my radio show if at all possible. I'm already following you on Twitter, so we can talk about that a little bit in direct message.
Okay, sounds good. Yeah, we'll definitely get connected in that and make it happen.
Okay.
Thanks a lot, Sergeant. I'm going to put you on mute, drop whenever you need to. I'm going to pull in my next guest, okay?
Okay, brother. Thanks a lot.
All right, my brother. Oh, wow, Rick. What a...
Oh.
What, I mean, is that... Is Sergeant Quintana just... Dude, my heart is just like... Well, I've been communicating and talking to Sergeant Quintana for a little over a month now. We chat back and forth a little bit since Teresa introduced me to him. And, I mean, this guy, you know, you read his bio. I didn't know that he was from Venezuela. I really didn't. And to hear that story, I mean, you know, he's absolutely right. We're all Americans first. It doesn't matter where we came from. But he can talk about a narrative that so many of us just don't know and bring it to a level that people need to understand. He saw his home go in the direction of Chavez, and now he's seeing his home again move in that direction. That speaks volumes. I mean, it has to. Am I wrong, Rick, or does that not speak volumes?
I mean, it speaks more than volumes, because trying to get this in the right wording. I mean, you see, he is a perfect example of those who do not learn from history are doomed to repeat it. You know, he saw the history of his native country going the way of socialism, so he moved from there, came here, and he's seeing it again.
Yeah, and you know, here's the funny thing about it. Every person I speak to that has come into America and become a citizen or is legal here, they all have the same story as Sergeant Quintana. I don't care if they came from Europe. I don't care if they came from Latin America. I don't care where they came from. Anybody that has come to this country, that came from a country that was moving in the direction of socialism, that came here, they all say the same thing, Rick. Well, I'm afraid of what I'm seeing. I'm seeing what happened where I came from happen here. I've heard it with Anthony Hernandez from Minnesota when he talked about when his grandfather came here from Mexico. I've heard it from countless other people that give me the same story. They say, Michael, you know, I saw this happen in my home country. I moved here to escape that, and I'm seeing and hearing words that are reminiscent of what I heard. It scares the hell out of me. It really does. It scares the hell out of me. And I wish that it would scare people outside of our group as badly as it scares me to hear this.
I mean, one thing that we definitely need to do is, you know, after this show, you know, just put the archive out there, you know, and just say, you know, listen to the first, what is it, hour or so, and just, and I mean, if the first hour doesn't frighten you, then America's dead.
Yeah, it is. Let's bring in, I think we've got Derek on. Derek, is that you at 703?
It is.
Derek, Derek, stand by 1 second. Folks, I want to bring in my next guest. Derek, I'm assuming you got to hear the tail end of Sergeant Quintana there.
I did.
Great patriot. Folks, I've got Derek Donovan on. Derek is with the Fisher House Program, which is a unique private-public partnership that supports the America's military in their time of need. Now, I'm going to let Derek go into a little bit more about the Fisher House Program, but I am so proud and so honored. Rick, we've got Derek Donovan. He's the vice president of Fisher House Foundation. Welcome to the show, Derek. Tell us a little bit about the Fisher House Program to our audience and how we can help and a little bit about what you do. The floor is yours.
Okay, well, thank you very much. Thanks for the opportunity. Fisher House is similar to Ronald McDonald Houses, except we build these houses at DOD medical centers and Veterans Affairs medical centers, and it's a place where families can have a home away from home when they have a loved one hospitalized. So when our heroes, our wounded warriors, come back home, the medical attention that they receive is some of the best in the world, but sometimes that medicine is not always enough, and sometimes you need your family around you, and that's what Fisher House does. It provides an opportunity and a means by which families can be near their loved ones at no cost to them for lodging, and we also provide airline tickets to our Hero Miles program to get those families there. And we have, this week, we will open up our 57th house across the country, and including two that we have in Germany, at 42 locations, 57 houses. We actually last year served over 17,000 families, so we're very, very proud of that. We've been in existence since 1991, so we just went over, finished our 21st year, and in that time we have served over 165,000 families and have saved those families almost $200 million in transportation and lodging costs. So we're,
wow,
we're proud of what we've done, but at the same time the need is great, and there's other places that still need a Fisher House, that want a Fisher House. And one of the things our chairman, Ken Fisher, always says is, hey, we're going to be in business as long as you need us. And so we're going to keep on trying to build these houses and try to take care of what we consider our greatest national treasure, and that's our men and women in uniform and their families.
Well, you know, it seems, Derek, it seems like every week I ask more and more of my audience from their pocketbooks. They all know I'm a veteran. I just had a veteran on with me, a brother of mine that served 10, 15 years after I did, Sergeant Quintana, former Marine. I ask a lot of my audience in opening up their pocketbooks, but they all understand that aside from the politics, if I'm to ask anybody to donate money to anything, if it's a choice, I'm always going to pick my band of brothers and sisters over the politicians. I love the people that I support, and I'll work my butt off for them. But if I'm going to give money, I'm going to give it to those organizations like yours, Wounded Warrior Project, Change It Back 2012, which is not so much a veterans organization, but it's headed up by a veteran that I believe in greatly, that has the same principles as me, and what me and those that you're helping espouse and what we fought for. So how can we help you financially? Where do we need to go? What kind of money are we talking about here? I mean, does $5 help? Does $1 help? Does, you know, what exactly, you know, it's got to cost a lot of money to fly something. Can we donate airline miles? You know, if I'm a frequent flyer and I've got 50,000 miles that I can afford, can I donate those to you? Questions like that. Can you answer any of those?
Oh, absolutely, and I appreciate the opportunity to do that. Our website is very simply www.fisherhouse.org. Like many organizations similar to ours, there's a big donate button. It'll take you right to a place where you can make a online donation that is very secure. So that's perhaps the easiest way to do it. And one of the things about, like you said, it is so important that the American public support our men and women in uniform and their families. But it's also important that people make wise decisions. And when they do that, one of the things that Fisher House is very proud of is the ratings that the charity watchdogs give us. Charity Navigator gives us their highest rating. It's 4 stars. American Institute of Philanthropy gives us an A-plus rating. Very, very few organizations get that A-plus rating. And basically what that tells people when they're looking for some way to help is that Fisher House is a good steward of their donations, of their gifts. And that's because Fisher House really sees our donors and sponsors and supporters as partners with us in helping to do the work that we do. And so we really believe that it's important that we get those and maintain those high ratings with the charity watchdogs. So and those are all available online. People can look at all the charities that they're considering supporting, and I think people will always see that Fisher House comes out real well in that. But you also talked about other ways to help. We have a program called Hero Miles, and it allows people to donate their frequent flyer miles. Lots of times people only have, 5,000, 10,000 miles. It's not enough for them to get a ticket, but we're able to take all those miles from a lot of people, put them in a larger pot, and then issue tickets. And so anybody can go to their frequent flyer program with their airline, and there's always a place for them to donate them to charity, and Fisher House is one of those options. It's even easier if you, again, go to our website, fisherhouse.org, and there's a big Hero Miles label there, too. You click on that, and it will take you right to whatever airline you have a program with, and it allows you to donate your frequent flyer miles. And that program was started in about 2005, really got going in 2006, and we're closing in on having issued over 30,000 tickets to family members, wounded service members, and that's a huge amount. Last year we did over 5,000 tickets. We issued more tickets than we ever have, and that's a huge savings to families. I mean, these families, when they know that somebody that they love and care about greatly is hospitalized and in a bad way, they just want to get there. And what we don't want to do is see families take on financial hardship or not be able to be there because they can't afford an airline ticket or because they can't afford lodging or because they can't, they just can't get there. And so that's, again, where Fisher House comes in with both lodging and transportation there. And you talked about the amounts. I mean, anything is going to help because the American public wants to do this. And so we're kind of all in this together. And so everybody donating $5, everybody donating $10, it grows and it becomes something even more. The government at our Department of Defense locations is required by law to charge families lodging. Fisher House doesn't believe that that's right when these families are in a crisis that the government has to turn around and say, hey, we can't give you something for nothing. We're going to have to charge you. Fisher House picks up those lodging fees. So every day, every week, every month, every night, there's families staying at Fisher Houses, and Fisher House picks up their lodging fees. So anything that people get, not only does it help us build new houses at new locations, but it helps us to take care of the families that are staying at Fisher Houses today.
Well, Derek, let me add two things on that. Okay, first of all, I'm looking at your website here, and typically the houses are 5,000 to 16,800 square foot homes donated by the Fisher family and Fisher House Foundation. Each house is designed to provide 8 to 21 suites. They're all professionally furnished, decorated in the tone and style of the local region. The houses can accommodate 16 to 42 families. They feature a common kitchen, laundry facilities, a dining room, and inviting living room with a library and toys for children. The newer homes are 100% handicap accessible and include elevators. Now, in reading that about the homes, which is fantastic, let's say you don't have the money or you don't have the miles. Let's say you don't have the Capital One Venture Card and you don't have the 25,000 miles or whatever that comes with it, you know, to donate. What are you carrying in your wallet? But you've got time. You've got time, or you can cook. Can people come and help volunteer by maybe helping clean a room or prepare a meal for a family?
Well, great question. There are hundreds of thousands of volunteer hours at Fisher Houses every year. At every location, the 42 different locations, those hospitals all have volunteer programs. And as part of those volunteer programs, one of the assignments people get can request is to volunteer at a Fisher House. The Fisher Houses all have a paid manager. They actually all have a paid housekeeper or housekeeping service as well, and then just some liability issues and different things like that that the government deals with. But there's not a lot of paid employees associated with a Fisher House, but there's families living there 24/7 all the time. And so that's where the volunteers come in. They're there to provide information. They're there to, answer questions. They're there to have a shoulder to lean on. And they're there to help people check in and figure out, you know, what's going on. Because by definition, these are families in crisis. They have somebody that's hospitalized. And more often than not, it's somebody that was wounded while fighting for their country. And so you do need that little help, bit of a helping hand. So any of the hospitals that have a Fisher House, you go to their at the VA medical centers, it's voluntary services. At the DOD hospitals, they all have a community service or a Red Cross program. Volunteers go through, and then they can request to be assigned to a Fisher House. But absolutely, the amount of volunteer work that goes into a Fisher House is actually a great adjunct, even though we're providing lodging, even though we're providing transportation and food and other basic support. Fisher Houses allow the American public to really say, hey, I do support the troops, and I support their families, especially in their time of need. And like I said, hundreds of thousands of hours every year at these Fisher Houses, because there's always volunteer there. So that part is awesome.
Well, I'm looking at your map now. Excuse me. I'm looking at your map now. I'm going to start with my home. I live in the Metroplex. I see you've got one here in Dallas, Texas, at the VA North Texas Healthcare System. I see you've got one down at Fort Hood. I see that you have one in El Paso, Brooks Army Medical Center, and Lackland Air Force. You've got two down in San Antonio. You've got one at DeBakey Medical Center down at Houston. Then you have one over at Elgin in southern Mississippi there, yeah. Then we've got one over at Eisenhower Army Medical Center at Fort Gordon, Georgia. That's where I went to AIT. We go up to the Pacific Northwest. You've got two up there. You've got one in Seattle, and you've got one in at Madigan Army Medical Center. Looks like y'all have got four in California, up and down the coast. You've got one in Utah. You've got one in Colorado. I mean, you guys have these all over the country. There's you've got one in Cincinnati, Ohio. I mean, there's really in the more other than the less populated states, you know, like maybe Montana, Iowa, you know, up there. You've got these strategically located throughout the United States.
Well, one of the things that was always important, I mean, we started building these at the major military medical centers. The military tends to consolidate a lot of their services, especially their specialty services. Especially what we've gone through in the last 10 years, it's not always been enough. And what we've seen is the VA has picked up an incredible amount of that capacity to include treating active duty service members. And so it was important for us to spread ourselves out. And one of the things you'll see on that list, there's four locations in particular, Minneapolis, Tampa, Palo Alto, California, and Richmond, Virginia, that the VA calls their level one polytrauma centers. And that's where our most seriously wounded service members go. It's the ones that have both amputations and traumatic brain injuries and burns. And so you have a lot of really complex medical situations that you need to treat concurrently. And so it was very important to Fisher House that we put Fisher Houses there, because if people were going through long rehabilitations, that's when they really needed their families there. And we have another one under construction in San Antonio at the Audie Murphy VA Medical Center, because Audie Murphy just opened up the fifth level one polytrauma center within the VA system. And so we need to get that house finished, which it'll be finished this year. But you're absolutely right. Wherever there's the need, that's where we're going. We also have a house that's under construction in Pittsburgh at the VA. And before the end of the year, we will start construction in Murfreesboro, Tennessee, Gainesville, Florida. Fort Bragg, North Carolina is going to get another house. And Fort Lewis up in the Washington State area that you mentioned, because their need is so great, because that house is always full, we're going to build another house up there as well.
Well, you just mentioned three that come that just right off the top. I mean, having been at stationed at Fort Bragg, of course, that's special ops. I mean, that's all the special ops comes out of Fort Bragg. I can see that. And up in Washington there, that Fort Lewis, that's a Ranger bat, or at least it was in my day. And then San Antonio, not only do you the San Antonio one, that is important, because we have the burn center here in Texas down at San Antonio. It's one of the greatest burn centers in the country, that's there at Brooks Army Medical Center. So that one's there. How is that one coming at San Antonio? Are the funds there? I'm sure you're always in need of more funds, but how is that coming? Because that's an important location. That's the medical mecca for the Army, San Antonio. They have the burn center there. I mean, it's just that's huge in the military world.
Oh, you're absolutely right. And at Brooke Army Medical Center, we actually have four Fisher Houses there, which is just indicative of how important that location is in San Antonio. We also have three houses at Lackland Air Force Base, and that whole San Antonio has sort of become a joint consolidated medical community. But what the VA was doing, because they were taking on those most severely wounded service members, they opened up that polytrauma unit, and we needed to put a Fisher House at the VA Medical Center there. And one of the things about Fisher Houses, you know, the foundation, we build them and we get them to the government to operate and maintain. As I said before, we provide resources to help them take care of those families as time goes on. But the government operates and maintains those places. But one of the things that is really important to us is that we build right adjacent to the hospital. We want to build right in the shadow of that hospital for a couple of reasons, but mostly so those families don't have to worry about getting to and from the hospitals so that they don't have to worry about where they're going to park, how they're going to get there, and so that they can be there for extended hours. And when they need a break, they can walk back to the Fisher House and they can get something to eat, or they can lay down in their room and get some rest. You know, lots of times you get moms and dads who go, and they'll do shift work. You know, they're always going to be have someone in that room with their loved one, with their son, with their daughter. And so when one's on duty, if you will, the other one can be back in at the Fisher House getting some rest, getting and also getting some compassion and getting some, you know, group love from the other residents of the house.
Well, and I don't think people probably understand how important that is, Derek. You know, I'll just give you – I grew up in San Antonio. Now, I left there in 82 when I joined the service, and it was less than a million people that lived there. I mean, by our terms here in Texas, San Antonio was not a huge city. It's a large city now. It's very, very large. It's a lot of people that live there. It's a vacation destination, not to mention that it is a you know, five or six military installations there. And, it, you know, when you've got a loved one, a son or a daughter, more than likely, that is, you know, has had four limbs amputated, or two limbs, or three limbs, or whatever, or has been burned very badly, or, you know, is incapacitated in any way, you're there. First of all, your nerves are you're walking on probably the very last nerve these folks have, first of all. Second of all, their son or their daughter's laying there, never to probably live a quote-unquote normal life. They're strapped for money as it is in an already bad economy. And to provide a service for them where all they have to do is walk across the street to get the rest, that, because if the loved one that's there taking care of the wounded soldier doesn't get the rest that they need, they then become a wounded soldier themselves.
Oh, you're absolutely right. And there's healing that goes on in other places besides that hospital and besides with that service member. I mean, I would say that, you know, when you have, just like you said, the trauma and the stress that goes with having a husband, wife, son, or daughter wounded and hospitalized, I mean, the family's wounded also, and the family also needs to heal. And one of the things, when Zach Fisher, who was a New York real estate gentleman, a philanthropist, a businessman, he was a lot of things. He was probably a patriot more than anything else. When he started this program, he thought, hey, this is something the government doesn't provide, and it's something I can provide. And so he started this program. But I think one of the things that he never quite envisioned was the way all these families, and it could be 21 families all living together under the same roof, sharing meals, coming together, leaning on each other, relying on each other. I don't think he ever realized the extent that the group therapy that would go on in a Fisher House and how that contributed and contributes to that family's healing as well as the patient's healing. But the other thing that you said I think is so important is those family members need to take care of themselves. And if they're going, you know, having to drive to a motel somewhere or a hotel somewhere, or, you know, God forbid, living out of their cars or something, they're not able to do that. But a Fisher House, and especially the way we construct them, and if you ever get an opportunity to visit a Fisher House, I'd like to say that you'd be surprised, but one of the things that Fisher House Foundation does is we build these houses kind of in a way and in a manner that the government wanted. These are really, really nice houses. Now, you read some of the sort of description of what's in them. You can go to our website, and there's pictures. These are nice houses. When families come there, and they don't know where they're going to stay, and they don't know how they're going to afford it, and somebody brings them to the Fisher House, a caseworker or a nurse manager or somebody brings them to a Fisher House and says, hey, this is where you're going to stay, they look at the accommodations. They look at how nice the living rooms, the dining rooms, the kitchens, and the suites are. And it's amazing. They just say, wow, this is for me. And so we do try to put this wow factor into the houses that is kind of special because we believe that you want to show those people, especially those people who have so, you know, recently sacrificed so much, that their sacrifice is important and that they're important and that healing process can begin. So,
I'm definitely going to the one over in Dallas. I'm looking at the picture of it now, I guess this is the meal room or a break room. I even noticed you've got the mobile one picture in there from, you know, the Pegasus. I think that's so fitting, having that Pegasus in there because, you know, of the history that Pegasus played in Greek mythology and being able to take people to new heights and take them to a new beginning. This is just remarkable, this house that I'm looking at over in Dallas. I'm definitely going to be going over there and looking to see how I can help, to whatever degree I can help.
Well, and you also talked about, you know, as we build a house, that with the importance of the one at Audie Murphy. One of the things, when you go to our website and you go to that donate site, the secured donation site, there's a pull-down menu. If you want to give to a specific house, if you want to help build that house in San Antonio, there's a way that you can put your donation towards that house. And one of the things that we'll tell you is that if you donate $5 or you donate $5,000, whatever, when you say specifically, I want it to go to that San Antonio house, we'll put it in that account, and we will use that, your donation, for the construction of that specific house. Because lots of times people want to be part of something that is happening in their community or something that has the importance of something like the Audie Murphy House. So we enable you to and enable the donors to do that.
That's just awesome. And I would encourage everybody that's listening, I work for Bank of America. I know whatever I donate to, whatever I choose to donate, if I do, I can arrange it to donate where my company is going to match my donation gift. So if I can only just to make the math simple, if I can donate $5, Bank of America is going to match me $5. So, you know, I want to encourage – the reason I bring that up, Derek, is, you know, we have people listening all over the country, and without knowing who they work for, check with your human resources. If it's a company that will match your donation, do it that way. Let's get the maximum amount of money out of the people we're working for and get some of their dollars. I mean, my God, we all know that Bank of America benefited from some of our tax dollars. If I can get some of that back into an organization like Fisher House, God knows I'm going to do so.
Well, we certainly appreciate that. That would be a great thing. And you're absolutely right. There's a lot of companies out there that are very good about, you know, catering their philanthropy to what their employees want to do. And there's countless examples of that. Another program that we have, and it's kind of our grassroots fundraising program, is called Team Fisher House. And what we do is we kind of essentially recruit fundraisers. They go out and they tell their friends, their neighbors, their coworkers, their employers, say, hey, I'm running the Marine Corps Marathon, or I'm running the Army 10-miler, or the Navy Nautical 10-miler, and I'm raising money for Fisher House. Will you donate? Will you match that? And we've got a great program there. It's been wildly successful because it allows individuals not just to donate, but to do grassroots fundraising on our behalf. And you can learn more about that by going to teamfisherhouse.org. And that's been a great program. Every year we have almost 1,000 people that run different races all around the country and do things to raise money and to help Fisher House. But it's
wow, that's
program.
Real cool. Is there any affiliation with the Army Cycling organization, the bicycling team that the Army has? And I ask because I have a nephew – that is on that Army, the U.S. Army cycling, or no, the U.S. Air Force cycling team. I need to approach him on that. Navy, is it Navy, babe? Yeah, the Navy, the U.S. Navy cycling team. I'm sorry, I've got so many nephews in different branches, I can't keep up with it. But that is something interesting. So if they're on a team or something of that nature, they could hit the people up on Facebook that are their friends. Hey, if I do 10 miles, you give me $1 a mile, and I'm going to donate to Fisher House.
Absolutely. And within that program, if somebody wanted to check out that teamfisherhouse.org, we provide sample letters, sample postcards, little business lines. But what it does is it allows everybody who's one of those fundraisers to have their own unique website that people can go to, donate to Fisher House. The money comes to Fisher House. But you're able to track how much you've raised. You're able to have the people who have donated in honor of your efforts make comments to say, hey, way to go, or hey, you know, so proud of you for doing this, for supporting our troops. It's a really neat program. It's a really great way for people who may not have a lot of resources themselves, but they've got friends, they've got neighbors, they've got family members, they've got coworkers. Who are also out there looking for a way to support our troops.
All right. Well, I appreciate it very much, Derek. I need to pull in our next guest, who is actually from I guess you might say a sister organization, Ranger Coffee. His name is Rob Startwood. I need to pull him in here. If you'd like to hang on with us and join the discussion, you're more than welcome to. I know that you're probably very busy, but I just wanted to extend the offer. But I do need to pull him in because we are down to about the last 20 minutes of the show.
Okay, well, Mike, thank you so much. I will listen, and thank you so much. Had a good two Marines on today, so thank you very much, and thank you for your service.
Well, thank you very much, my friend. I appreciate it. I'm just going to place you on pause. Just hang out at your convenience. I'm going to go ahead and pull in here a gentleman from the Hypercaffeination Nation. I am a huge coffee drinker. Rob, tell us a little bit about Ranger House, or Ranger Coffee, I'm sorry, and how, this is the day after Armed Forces Day. I've been blessed. I've had my buddy, Sergeant Quintana, on, who is a ex-Marine who has an organization called Change It Back 2012 that's, you know, without going into the politics, I don't want to bring you or Derek either into politics, because y'all are not about that. But he's a veteran band of brother of mine. Then I had Derek Donovan on from Fisher House, and now I'm proud to have you on from Ranger Coffee. The floor is yours, Rob.
Absolutely. Thanks for having us. We are we're just a small company with a big heart, located in Atlanta, Georgia. We were founded back in 2006 with a very simple purpose, offering premium coffee to premium folks. And ever since then, we have sold coffee worldwide. We serve a top 0.3% Arabica bean product to folks mainly through the mail all over the world. And our primary consumer constituency and the constituency that we believe in supporting the most, of course, are our U.S. military members. I'm a veteran myself. I didn't start the company. A buddy of mine did, but transitioned the company to me a couple years ago and asked me if I would take it over. And just this year, we've actually relaunched the company as a social enterprise. So the point that I'd like to make before we talk too much about the coffee and some of the work that we've done is that as of January 1st, 2012, 50% of our distributed profits are invested in the causes which promote and support veterans. So,
such as
Gallant Few, Building for America's Future via the Tunnel to Towers Foundation, which builds homes for the most severely wounded folks out there. And we've got a broad sprinkling of other folks that we are presently in the process of vetting for long-term partnerships and investment opportunities. So the whole idea behind the repurposing of our company as a social enterprise is we believe that veterans represent a critical component of our future. They are trained, disciplined. They are skilled in ways in which most folks who are out in the marketplace aren't. And the idea is these are the kind of people that we want to invest in for the future of our country. If we can engage them, or we can work with organizations who are engaging them at a critical time in their transition from the military into the civilian populace, we believe that the right investment of the right amount of capital and resources and everything else that folks might need at the right time will help posture these people to be leaders in business, government, and in our communities, and we believe that's a good thing.
Oh, I couldn't agree more. I might encourage you to meet Derek Donovan, who's on the phone with us. Derek, say hi to Rob. Rob.
Hi, Rob.
Hey, hi, Derek. Very nice to meet you.
Nice to meet you, just like you on Facebook.
Absolutely.
Rob, you know, as a veteran and as someone like yourself, and first of all, thank you very much for your service. I know you probably didn't get to hear Sergeant Quintana, but I know that he would thank you for your service as well. We all like a strong cup of Joe. I mean, that's
absolutely
kind of what got us going in the morning, was a strong cup of that Joe. So what you're doing is you're taking the sale of coffee. With the profits from that, you're turning around and you're investing some of those profits into organizations that are helping our band of brothers and sisters. Am I understanding you correctly?
That's right. But I would say that just as a point of distinction, that the manner in which we want to do that now is significant. The whole idea is for every dollar that a shareholder in our company puts in their pocket, a dollar also goes into an organization that benefits a veteran or promotes veteran causes. So, yes, we are allocating resources for what we call veteran impact, but we believe we're doing so in a significant way, and we believe that that's ultimately what's going to distinguish us from the many other wonderful businesses in the veteran-owned business community who are rightly and justly investing in similar ways.
Okay. Now, you say people that invest in your company. How can one invest? Are you on the New York Stock Exchange or the NASDAQ?
No. I'm sorry. I didn't mean to confuse. We're a small company with just a handful of owners. But what I mean by investing is partnering with us as a consumer.
Okay.
The whole idea is people spend a lot of money. Coffee industry is an $80 billion industry.
Right.
And without attacking some of our larger brothers in the industry, our firm belief is that people make that purchasing decision generally without much thought at all. And the only folks that benefit at the end of the day, and there's nothing wrong with this, is the consumer who receives the coffee and the company that sold it to them. The whole idea behind Ranger Coffee is we want to benefit a third-party constituency that isn't otherwise considered when a consumer goes and purchases a product from a vendor. And we believe that because we give so significantly and we desire to have an impact that's significant, that we can earn a larger portion of market share. And I'll quote you this statistic. I just told you that coffee is an $80 billion industry. 0.45% of our nation has served in uniform since the beginning of the War on Terror in 2001. If we can earn 0.45% market share with our coffee company, the impact on veterans will be upwards of $50 million. And we believe that's significant. It's a large number, but it's certainly something that we have our sights set on. So you asked, how can you invest? It's real easy. Go to www.rangercoffee.com, buy one of our premium grade Arabica bean products, and know that just by doing that simple act, which is probably something that you do anyway if you're a coffee drinker, you are investing for America's future.
Well, I'm looking at your website now, and I'm very – I got to tell you, this airborne halo, I'm going to have to check into that, being an ex-paratrooper. And your prices are reasonable, and coffee is big business. I used to be in the coffee business. As a matter of fact, when I got out of the service, I sold Cane's Coffee. But nowadays, I work for Bank of America, and I buy my coffee at Sam's. I buy 5-pound bags of community coffee, and I pay about, I don't know, I think I pay about, I don't know, $20 for 5 pounds or something like that. I don't know if community coffee, which is an okay coffee. All right, it's better than Folgers. Now I'm looking. Your coffee price is a little bit more expensive, but what I'm buying with a better coffee is I'm buying some shares into the company where I know my money is going to go towards helping my band of brothers and sisters.
Well, that's right. You're not buying an ownership interest, but you're supporting. You're supporting a cause and a movement that is designed to make a significant impact in the community. And a good number of folks that we service and that we sell to are former military, but the largest cross-section of people that we work with are not folks who have any military background whatsoever, but people that just believe in what we're doing and believe in the veteran constituency as a whole. I told you that veterans are, and you know this already because you are a veteran, veterans are skilled in many different things, and we want to take those skills out of the military and help veterans continue serving the country outside the uniform. But I'll also tell you that we have some veterans who are struggling significantly in light of protracted conflict, which has lasted beyond 10 years. We've got folks who are struggling with homelessness, underemployment, divorce, veteran suicide. A veteran kills themselves one every 80 minutes. So
yeah.
The other side of our mission is you know, obviously promoting folks who are doing well, but helping raise up folks who are kind of struggling a little bit so that they can make that transition effectively. The cost of war, and we have served in the most recent conflict, so we understand this firsthand. But the cost of war is real, and it affects everybody differently. And there's nothing wrong with folks who have been injured, who suffer from post-traumatic stress disorder, or some of these different things. It's just a fact of our circumstances. The great part about the very sad story that exists in some veterans' lives is that there are organizations standing up throughout our country who are stepping up to meet and address the very needs that are going to help our veterans effectively transition, and those are the kind of organizations that we are here to support.
Awesome. I'm sitting here looking at this Airborne Prop Blast. That looks like a good coffee.
Absolutely, and let me just tell you a little bit about the coffee. We work with a...
Please do.
We work with a roaster out of Columbus, Georgia, which is where the company was originally founded. He imports our beans from all over the world, some of the finest beans. I think I quoted you a statistic of 0.3%. Our roaster used to be a chemist, and he's a fanatic for quality. So he only imports the best beans from places like Tanzania and Kenya and certainly South America and Ethiopia. So our beans come in from all over the world. We've specially developed these particular blends to have bold taste because most of our coffee drinkers prefer a bold flavor. But the product that really put our company on the map are our hypercaffeinated blends.
Uh-huh.
The company's previous founder, Zach Thomas, in our roaster, developed an idea to infuse beans with twice the amount of caffeine as they would otherwise contain during the roasting process. So for no additional charge, you can go to our website and you can look at some of the different products that we offer and see that our hypercaffeinated blends basically carry twice the bang for your buck.
Well, as I'm looking at it right now, and here's the thing, Rob, people probably are saying, why would I want to drink something with extra caffeine? What they don't understand is from our perspective, you know, we get up, we hit the chow hall, it's eat the hard stuff, or eat the soft stuff, put the hard stuff in your pockets, and a couple of strong cups of Joe to get you going. And you
right.
Wanted that caffeine.
That's right. And there's no getting around the idea that there is a caffeine craze throughout the country right now, energy drinks and all the different types of products. But certainly for folks pulling extended duty, I mean, we've got truck drivers that buy our product, computer developers, anybody and everybody who's pulling a third shift or they just want to drink one cup of coffee and get the benefit of drinking two. They've certainly found our product to be a benefit. And like I said, bold flavor. It can get you a little wired. But, again, that's not every product. If you just prefer a good quality product with the standard rates of caffeine, we offer a variety of those, both in medium roast and dark roast. And And I'd like to tell the listening audience that we'll be expanding our product line over the course of time. We're looking to launch 5 new products in the month of June. We're also looking to start offering single-serving packets for folks that use the Keurig egg brewers and just want a single serving, but also for folks who are backpackers or spend time out in the field, different things like that. So those are some of the things that we'll be rolling out here in the future. The biggest consideration that we've had is just making sure that we have invested properly in our infrastructure for growth. We are currently on track to triple our sales from last year as a result of unveiling this new economic model internally. And we just want to make sure that we're prepared to meet the customer demand, because if we can't offer the service that meets the quality of the coffee, that meets the quality of the cause that we're serving, then we can't believe in that. So we're slowing things down a little bit. We're making some necessary investments in technology and infrastructure in our internal systems, and then we're going to continue to hit the market hard so we can make the impact that we need to make in the lives of veterans.
Thank God for the free market. I love it. I really do, Rob. In fact, I think I'm going to buy a 5-pound bag and take it over to Fisher House in Dallas. It's exactly what I'm going to do.
That would be awesome. They would love that.
I'm looking at this Airborne Prop Blast, 5 pounds. I'm thinking Fisher House over in Dallas could use that.
Absolutely. Well, we'd love to serve you, and we thank you for that.
Well, hey, guys, we're running down to the very end here. I've got Derek on. I've got Rob on. Rick, real quickly, I want to give you a few minutes to address either Rob or Derek, either one, and then let's just do a real quick one and a half minute, so close out with Rob and Derek, and get ready to bring this Sunday show to an end.
I want to thank both of you for all that you've done for the military veterans. I know that my father was a member of the military, and I mean, just everything that you do for them. For the military, it's greatly appreciated, both of you.
Well, thank you.
Yeah, thank you.
All right, well, Derek, let's start with you. Derek, take about a minute and a half, if you would, and then Rob, about a minute and a half, and that will bring us to the end of the show. And I want to thank you both for joining us today. Guests, remember, there is no show next Sunday because it is Memorial Day. I'll be enjoying that with my family. So I'll see you the week after next. We'll be on Facebook a little bit more this week. Derek, go ahead. Minute and a half.
Okay. Again, Fisher House provides a home away from home. We believe that a family's love is the best medicine. People can support us and find out how they might be able to volunteer, how they might be able to contribute frequent flyer miles, how they can sign up to be part of our Team Fisher House and do grassroots fundraising with whatever kind of athletic or other event that they might do. And that's all available at www.fisherhouse.org. Send us an email, which you can do through the website. Ask us anything, and we can try to work out how you can support our troops and their family. And Rob, I just want to say you guys arranged the coffee. You know, I think it's great when we served in uniform, but we never stopped serving. And the things that you guys are doing speak highly for our military in general. We serve in uniform, and then we return great citizens back to society. So thanks for what you guys are doing.
Thank you very much, Derek. I appreciate that. Rob, take about a minute, buddy.
Yep, thank you, Derek, also for your comments, and I appreciate everything you're doing at the Fisher House. I've had soldiers who have been severely injured, and the Fisher Houses have always welcomed the families. So hats off to you and to the viewing audience or the listening audience, a wonderful cause to support. Ranger Coffee is revolutionizing the economics of the coffee industry. We believe that we can make the everyday purchasing decisions mean something for veterans, and we're already having a significant impact. When you choose to buy the coffee, when you choose to buy quality coffee, choose Ranger Coffee, and the requisite investment will be made on your behalf. And the causes which promote and support veterans. Again, we invest 50% of our distributed profits in the causes which promote and support veterans, and we believe that doing so is investing in America to make it stronger for the future. You can find us at www.rangercoffee.com. You can also find us on Facebook or Twitter, and we look forward to serving you. We are a veteran-owned and operated business. We have service-oriented backgrounds, and we believe that the best way to earn the respect and the reputation that we need in the marketplace is to serve our constituents effectively and only with the highest quality products. So we look forward to the opportunity to serve y'all in the future, and we appreciate the opportunity to be here today and tell you a little bit more about our company and what we do.
Thank you very much, Rob. Hoorah to both you and Derek. Folks, we're down to the very last 15 seconds of this. Remember...
Bellis says, no use for the bourgeois town.